All right, buckle up, everyone, because today we're diving deep into a case that's basically ripped straight from the Financial Times. Hampson Trust versus SCM. You know, you're getting ready for that huge M&A meeting, and you really got to know the ins and outs of tender offers. And let me tell you, this battle for corporate control, this one's got it all. Think 1985, big money, and enough drama to make Wall Street blush, but, you know, with a British twist.
Yeah, and you know what makes this whole case so fascinating? It really boils down to this kind of critical ambiguity in the Williams Act, right? So we've got this law that's supposed to protect shareholders. Companies have to spill the beans, you know, disclose all this information when they're planning a tender offer. But here's the kicker. The Williams Act never actually defines what a tender offer is.
Oh, so we're talking about a legal loophole, the kind that can make or break a whole corporate takeover.
Exactly. So picture this. Hampson Trust, right, this UK conglomerate, they've got their eyes set on SCM, a US company, and they decide to go with a classic tender offer, put a price tag on each share, trying to snag a controlling stake.
Right. Sounds pretty straightforward so far, but what happened next?
Well, SCM, they weren't going down without a fight. Oh, no. They hit back with what we call a leveraged buyout, or LBO for short. Basically, they're trying to buy themselves out to block Hansen's play. And just so everyone's on the same page, an LBO, that's when you use borrowed money to buy up a company's shares. It's a real power move when you're facing a hostile takeover.
Oh, so things are heating up.
Yeah.
Tell me, what did this LBO mean for SCM? What do they have to do?
Well, SCM, they got clever. They offered Merrill Lynch, you know, their investment bank, a lockup option. This gave Merrill Lynch the right to buy some of SCM's, like, crown jewels, their most valuable divisions, but at a huge discount if anyone managed to grab a third of SCM's shares.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant move, really, a classic poison pill to scare Hampson Trust off from buying more.
I can see why they call it a poison pill, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So how did Hampson Trust respond to this, you know, this sudden shift in the game?
They didn't back down, not a chance. Instead, they switched gears completely. They ditched the whole formal tender offer and started buying up big chunks of SCM stock privately, making deals with these big institutional investors like Goldman Sachs.
Oh, interesting. So they're sidestepping the traditional tender offer, going for a more under-the-radar approach. It's almost like, you know, when you're trying to buy all the houses on a street quietly, one by one, so you don't cause a stir.
That's a great analogy. And that's precisely what landed Hampson Trust in hot water, you see. SCM, they cried foul, hauled Hampson Trust into court, claiming these private buys were just a sneaky tender offer in disguise, breaking the Williams Act because of the lack of, you know, the required disclosures.
So the whole case hinges on this question. When do private stock purchases cross the line and become a regulated tender offer? This is big, especially for lawyers who have to untangle these M&A complexities.
Oh, absolutely. The district court, they initially sided with SCM, slapped Hampson Trust with an injunction to stop them from buying more stock. Their take on the SEC's eight-factor test for spotting tender offers was pretty rigid, like they were checking off boxes instead of seeing the bigger picture.
Wait, hold on. Eight-factor test. Could you break that down for us? What are we talking about here?
Sure. The SEC, they use these factors as guidelines, right, to figure out if a bunch of stock purchases actually amount to a tender offer. Some of the big ones include publicly announcing you want to acquire a company, offering a premium price for those shares, going after a fixed minimum number of shares, and using pressure tactics to get shareholders to sell quickly.
So if you see a few of these factors popping up, it starts to look a lot like a tender offer, right?
Yeah, you could say that. But the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, that's where the case went next. They weren't buying the lower court's, you know, strict interpretation. They were like, hold on, context matters more than just checking boxes. They basically said the SEC's factors, you got to look at them all together, not just one by one.
So it's not just about ticking boxes, but understand the whole story behind these stock purchases.
Exactly. And what's really interesting is that the Second Circuit found some pretty big errors in how the district court analyzed everything.
What kind of errors? Did they misread the facts or miss some crucial details?
Both, actually. They got so hung up on the SEC factors that they didn't really dig into the nuances of what was going on. They even jumped to the conclusion that Hampson Trust had meticulously planned these private purchases all along just to dodge the tender offer rules.
But that wasn't the case.
Nope, not according to the evidence. Hampson Trust's internal documents, their meeting minutes, all that stuff, it painted a totally different picture. It became clear that these private purchases were a direct response to SCM's poison pill. You know, a strategic shift on the fly, not some premeditated scheme. Timing was everything here.
So it was more like a brilliant improvisation, a way for Hampson Trust to adapt to a sudden change in the game.
Exactly. The Second Circuit recognized that Hanson Trust only started these private deals after SCM pulled out that poison pill. That detail was key. It reframed their actions as a reaction, not some calculated attempt to bypass regulations.
This work gets really interesting. So how did the Second Circuit ultimately decide that these private purchases weren't a tender offer? After all, Hanson Trust was still buying up a ton of stock, right?
Right, and that's where the specifics of the case really matter. The Second Circuit, they highlighted three key things that separated these private purchases from a traditional tender offer. First, they pointed out that Hanson Trust was mainly dealing with sophisticated investors, like Goldman Sachs, not everyday individual shareholders.
Okay, so we're talking about seasoned players in the financial world, not easily swayed or tricked. Institutions like Goldman Sachs, they've got whole teams of lawyers and analysts, so you can't really say they were coerced or misled.
Exactly. They're not seen as vulnerable in the same way individual investors might be. The second point the Second Circuit made was that Hanson Trust didn't use any of those high-pressure tactics that usually come with tender offers.
So, no aggressive deadlines for shareholders to make up their minds, no flashy public campaigns, no direct pressure from Hanson Trust to sell.
None of that. Hanson Trust just approached these big investors privately, laid out their offers.
So it's more like a series of quiet negotiations, not a big public takeover campaign.
Precisely. And the third point, and this is crucial to understanding the Second Circuit's logic, is that SCM stock was still being publicly traded even after Hanson Trust made those private deals.
Meaning other shareholders could still sell their shares on the open market or go with the leveraged buyout offer from SCM and Merrill Lynch. Their choices weren't limited by what Hanson Trust was doing.
Precisely. The Second Circuit argued that a real disguised tender offer would have effectively shut out other shareholders, handing Hanson Trust control of the company, and that clearly wasn't happening here.
So, the Second Circuit was making it clear that SCM shareholders still had options and weren't being forced into any particular decision by Hanson Trust.
Exactly. That difference is fundamental when you're trying to figure out if something's a tender offer. Courts care about protecting shareholders, making sure they have enough info and a fair chance to make good decisions. In this case, the Second Circuit said they did.
Wow, what a wild ride this case is. But let's pause for a second and think about what this all means for our listener, the one who's gearing up for that big M&A meeting and wants to really impress.
One of the biggest takeaways is that documentation is key, especially if you have to switch up your strategy in the middle of a takeover. Hanson Trust, they won because they kept meticulous records. It proved they didn't plan those private purchases beforehand. They were just reacting to SCM.
It's like they left a clear trail for the court to follow, showing they were reacting, not executing some secret plan.
Exactly. This case screams at anyone involved in M&A. Document every decision, every email, every single meeting minute. Those records could be your saving grace in a legal battle down the line.
Got it. Document everything. What about the injunction, though? The Second Circuit had some strong opinions about that, right?
He did. They basically said the district court was way too quick to slap on that injunction. Remember, a preliminary injunction, that's a big deal. It's meant to prevent serious harm while a case is going on, and it can really mess with a company's operations.
So it's not a decision courts should take lightly.
Exactly. The Second Circuit felt that SCM hadn't really shown they were facing immediate, irreversible harm. They said, look, if Hanson Trust's purchases turn out to be illegal, SCM can get compensated with money later. It wasn't a do-or-die situation that needed an injunction.
So the Second Circuit thought the district court overstepped its boundaries.
Kinda, yeah. They thought the lower court focused too much on technicalities and not enough on understanding the whole situation. And this points to a bigger principle about how courts should act in these takeover fights. The Second Circuit stressed that they need to stay neutral. Courts shouldn't pick sides or try to influence the outcome. Their job is to make sure everyone's playing by the rules on a level playing field.
So courts shouldn't just hit the pause button on a deal without carefully considering everything, all the angles and what could happen.
Exactly. That's a huge takeaway for anyone in M&A. Don't assume the courts will automatically side with you or grant injunctions or other legal remedies. You got to build a strong case and be ready to back up what you did.
All right, so far, we've learned to document like crazy, be ready to defend ourselves, and not expect the courts to favor us. Any other gems of wisdom our listeners should keep in mind?
Well, it's also super important to think about the historical context. This case happened during a time when corporate raiding was running rampant. Companies were going after each other left and right. The Williams Act was supposed to protect shareholders caught in the middle of all that, but because it's kind of vague, it led to legal fights like this one.
So it's not just about following the rules word for word, but understanding the spirit of the law, why it exists in the first place.
Exactly. And I think that's what the Second Circuit was getting at in their ruling. They realized that the Williams Act wasn't meant to stifle competition or block legitimate takeovers. It was designed to make sure these fights were fair, that shareholders had a real chance to make informed choices.
So the law shouldn't be used to give one side an unfair advantage.
Exactly. And this idea goes beyond corporate takeovers. It applies to any legal dispute. The law should be about fairness, protecting everyone's rights.
Okay, before we move on, let's do a quick recap of what we've covered so far. We started with the background of Hanson Trust versus SCM, this epic battle over what a tender offer actually is. We talked about how the district court sided with SCM, stopping Hanson Trust with an injunction, and then we dug into the Second Circuit's decision to overturn that injunction. We talked about their analysis of the SEC's 8-factor test and how they stressed the importance of looking at the whole picture. We also touched on how crucial it is to keep detailed records and for courts to be neutral. Finally, we discussed the historical context of the Williams Act and its role in keeping corporate takeovers fair. Anything else we should highlight before we move on?
I think you nailed all the key points. It's a complex case, lots of moving parts, but you did a great job breaking it down.
That's great to hear. Now, ready to dive into the lasting impact of this case? Because its effects, they go way beyond just the companies involved.
Absolutely. Let's explore that next. This case, it was more than just some corporate clash, you know. It really set a precedent that we still see today in how courts handle these takeover battles.
So what exactly changed in the legal world because of this case? What shifted?
Well, for one thing, it solidified this idea that a tender offer, it's not just some rigid checklist, you know. It's not about ticking boxes. It's about analyzing the whole situation, asking the right questions, like, are shareholders being pressured? Do they have all the info they need to make a smart choice?
So the focus moved away from technicalities and towards the real impact on shareholders, putting their protection first.
Exactly. And this shift is huge because it gives courts the power to look beyond strict rules and consider the unique circumstances of each case. It acknowledges that context matters. A lot.
This is gold for our listener who's prepping for that big M&A meeting. So let's say I'm a company and I'm planning a takeover. What's the key takeaway for me? How do I make sure I'm on the right side of the law?
Transparency, that's the name of the game. Make sure those shareholders have all the information, give them everything they need to make informed decisions, and of course, be ready to defend your actions in court if it comes to that.
Transparency is key. Got it. What about injunctions in these takeover battles? Did this case change how courts look at those requests?
Oh, absolutely. The Second Circuit's decision in Hanson Trust, it sent a loud and clear message. Courts need to be really careful when they're issuing injunctions in these kinds of cases. They shouldn't be used as a weapon to give one side an advantage.
So no more hasty injunctions without really thinking about the consequences.
Exactly. Courts have to weigh the potential harm to both sides very carefully and only issue an injunction if it's absolutely necessary to prevent, you know, some kind of serious irreversible damage.
It all boils down to balance and fairness, making sure everyone has a fair shot.
Precisely. And this whole fairness thing, it's not just about corporate takeovers. It's fundamental to the entire legal system.
Okay, so we've covered how this case affected the definition of tender offers and the use of injunctions. Anything else we should touch on?
Well, the case also had this ripple effect on corporate governance overall. It was like a wake-up call for companies. They realized they had to be more proactive in defending themselves against these hostile takeovers.
So it's not just about playing by the rules when you're launching a takeover. It's also about being ready to defend against one.
Right? Exactly. Hanson Trust showed everyone that companies couldn't afford to just sit there and wait. They needed strategies in place to protect themselves from these corporate raiders.
I bet we saw a lot more of those defensive tactics after this. Things like poison pills and other anti-takeover measures.
Absolutely. Companies got a lot more creative with their defenses.
Which probably led to even more legal battles down the road, right?
Yeah.
As companies try to outsmart each other.
No doubt about it. The world of corporate takeovers, it's constantly evolving. But Hanson Trust, that case remains a landmark decision. It continues to shape the legal landscape.
So if our listener could take away just one big thing from all of this, what should it be?
I think the most important lesson here is that the law, it's rarely black and white. There's often a lot of gray area, especially in complex areas like tender offers, and that's why having experienced legal counsel on your side, it's invaluable.
Wise words. Having a skilled lawyer in your corner can make a world of difference when you're navigating these tricky M&A waters.
Absolutely. As Hanson Trust shows us, even the most carefully laid plans can go sideways if you're not ready for the unexpected.
And in the world of corporate takeovers, the unexpected is always right around the corner.
Couldn't agree more.
Before we wrap up this section, let's go back to something we touched on earlier, the difference between sophisticated and unsophisticated investors.
Right, yeah, that's a key distinction in this case, and it comes up all the time in securities law.
Because how sophisticated an investor is, that can really affect how a court interprets the law, right?
Absolutely. In Hanson Trust, the fact that Hanson was mostly dealing with institutional investors like Goldman Sachs, that was a big part of why the Second Circuit ruled the way they did.
Because those institutions, they're assumed to have a lot more financial expertise, right? They've got access to legal counsel and all that.
Precisely. They're not as vulnerable to manipulation or pressure tactics as individual investors might be.
So the court basically gave Hanson Trust more leeway because they were dealing with savvy investors who could look out for themselves.
Yeah, you could say that. The court recognized that these institutions were capable of assessing the risks and making informed decisions without needing the same level of protection as individual investors.
That makes sense, but it does raise some interesting questions. Like, what happens when a company is targeting both sophisticated and unsophisticated investors at the same time? How do courts balance those different levels of expertise and vulnerability?
That's a great question. It's something courts have to grapple with on a case-by-case basis, really looking at the specific details of each situation.
Because in the end, the goal is to protect all shareholders, no matter how much they know.
Absolutely. But the level of protection, that might change depending on how well-equipped the investor is to handle the complexities of the deal.
This area of law is so nuanced. I'm starting to really appreciate that. It's not just about applying rigid rules. It's about understanding the context, the players, and how everyone could be affected.
Exactly. It's about finding that sweet spot between protecting investors and allowing fair competition in the market.
We don't want to stifle innovation or stop companies from growing and evolving.
Right. The law needs to be flexible enough to adapt to change, but it also has to ensure that shareholders are treated fairly.
I'm starting to get it. But before we move on, let's make sure our listeners are on the same page.
Good idea.
So, quick recap. We've been talking about how important it is to consider investor sophistication in tender offers. We've established that courts tend to give companies more leeway when they're dealing with sophisticated investors like institutions. But they're still mindful of the need to protect all shareholders, no matter their level of expertise.
That's it in a nutshell. It's all about balance.
And this whole distinction between sophisticated and unsophisticated investors, it's not just about tender offers. This comes up in all sorts of securities law cases.
Absolutely. It's a fundamental concept in securities law, really.
So if our listener is involved in any kind of securities transaction, they need to be aware of this distinction and how it could affect their legal rights and obligations.
Definitely. It's something every lawyer and business professional in this field needs to keep in mind.
I think we've covered that pretty thoroughly. Now, ready to move on to the last part of our deep dive, we'll explore some of the broader implications of Hanson Trust and how it continues to impact the world of M&A.
Absolutely. Let's get into it. You know, the Hanson Trust case, it wasn't just about the legal battle itself. It was like a masterclass in M&A strategy. You know what I mean? It really highlighted how important it is to be adaptable, to be able to switch gears when things change.
Right. It's like you need to be able to think on your feet. Like in a high-stakes chess match, you have to anticipate your opponent's moves and be ready with a counter strategy.
Exactly. It's a game of strategy, and having a strong legal team, well, that's like having a grandmaster by your side, guiding you through all the complexities.
Yeah, because one wrong move in M&A, and you could end up in court or even lose the whole deal.
Exactly. And beyond just the strategy, Hanson Trust really underscored how important it is to truly understand the Williams Act. It's not just about checking the boxes and following the rules word for word, but about understanding the spirit of the law, its intent. It's about ensuring fairness and transparency in the takeover process.
So it's about seeing the bigger picture, not getting bogged down on the technicality.
Precisely. And to do that, you need a deep understanding of the case law, how courts have interpreted the Williams Act over time. Remember, we've seen that the definition of a tender offer It's not always crystal clear. Context matters a lot.
Which is why having experienced legal counsel is so crucial.
Yeah.
They can help you navigate those gray areas and figure out if what you're doing might be considered a tender offer, even if you're not technically launching a formal bid.
Absolutely. It's always better to be safe than sorry, right? Seek expert legal guidance every step of the way.
So for our listener who's prepping for that M&A meeting, the message is clear. Talk to your legal team a lot.
Couldn't agree more. Now let's shift gears for a moment. It's important to recognize the impact Hanson Trust had on the evolution of those defensive tactics we talked about earlier. It really pushed companies to be more proactive in protecting themselves from hostile takeovers.
So we're talking about poison pills, golden parachutes, all those creative anti-takeover measures.
Exactly. Companies realized they couldn't just sit there and wait to be targeted. They had to build up their defenses, and Hanson Trust was a wake-up call.
Which, of course, led to even more sophisticated legal battles as companies try to outmaneuver each other.
Oh, absolutely. It's an ongoing arms race in the world of M&A, and Hanson Trust definitely raised the stakes.
And it highlighted the need for companies to always be vigilant, always prepared. You just never know when a hostile bid might come along.
That's the reality of this game. Now, as we wrap up our deep dive into Hanson Trust, I want to leave our listener with one final thought. If you're involved in M&A, whether you're the one acquiring or the one being acquired, always, always be ready for a fight.
It's a battleground out there with billions of dollars at stake.
Exactly. So do your homework, assemble a top-notch legal team, and don't be afraid to get creative with your strategy.
And never underestimate the importance of learning from the past. The lessons from Hanson Trust, they're just as relevant today as they were back then in 1985. Adaptability, strategic thinking, and a solid understanding of the law, those are the keys to success in M&A.
Well said. Those are invaluable insights for anyone navigating the complex world of mergers and acquisitions.
This has been a fascinating deep dive into this landmark case. Thanks for joining us and sharing your expertise.
My pleasure. I always enjoy breaking down these complicated legal battles and exploring what they mean.
And to our listener, best of luck with that upcoming M&A meeting. We hope this deep dive has given you some valuable insights to help you navigate those high-stakes negotiations.
Remember, sometimes the best deals are the ones that require a little creativity and a willingness to adapt when things don't go as planned.
Great advice to end on. Thanks for listening, everyone, and until next time, happy deal-making.